Welcome back to the Thoughtful Techie Cloud Podcast. I am very excited today. I am here with a special guest, Fernando Honig. Fernando is the CEO and tech founder of StackZone, a startup that aims to help businesses scale by simplifying their environments through automation. Welcome, Fernando.
Hey, how is it going, Greg?
It's going pretty good. So you're based out of London, right, Fernando?
Yeah, I'm outside of London, very close to the Windsor Castle that probably you are very familiar with. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Cool. So from Fernando and I met through LinkedIn, through various communications, and today we're going to talk about Fernando's inspiring story through his obsession with helping businesses scale. So my understanding, Fernando, is you used to kind of work what I would say 9-to-5 jobs. That's what I've been doing here for the last several years. And a couple of years ago, something really inspired you to start your own startup, StackZone.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. So, you know, I'm 40 years old, so been in this kind of industry for more than 20 now. Whenever you typically start with your job career, typically it's a 9-to-5 job. And I've been doing that for, I would say, about 15 years. And then during the pandemic, I decided to create something different, to let this entrepreneur animal get out. And I think it's really, really fulfilling.
That's right. Unleash the beast. Cool. Definitely want to dig into that a little bit here soon into the interview. But I'm always fascinated to kind of rewind the clock a little bit and really focus on the genesis of how it all came to be. So I'm just kind of curious, what was your life like as a kid? And when did you know that you kind of had those, some tech superpowers brewing there?
Yeah, as I mentioned, so I am from Argentina. So I was born in Argentina. And imagine, so it was in the 80s. Technology wasn't the big thing back then. Right. So probably for the ones hearing this interview, they're not going to realize that I was basically fitting modems into PCs. So that was my first job. So there was a single internet provider in the city that I was living, and my job actually was going in my bicycle or sometimes in a car to customers and just fitting on the motherboards the modem. And probably you remember. Wow. Some people might not remember, never know about the noise of the modem.
I definitely remember the modems. Just out of curiosity, what were the speeds you were installing back there? Were they like 1200 baud or
14.4? So that was kind of the, at some point, there was the 56 or 33.6 and 56K. It was, wow, look at that. This is blowing. The internet was really a good thing back then.
Yeah, I think modems topped out. I think it was like 56.6K. And I think it was a limitation of the landline itself, if memory serves.
Yeah, and then it became the ADSL, the DSL in more popular. But yeah, after that, I was a customer support rep, taking the phone and just making sure that people were installing it right and navigating to websites. Yeah, it started like that. And then I moved to the center of the country in Argentina, where I started my first startup, which was a hosting company. So I was building racks, building servers, and hosting many websites, coding websites with PHP. So it was kind of a progression from there.
Nice. How old were you when you were doing that? Was it like teenage years or like early 20s?
It was early 20s. If I remember correctly, it was 21, 22 when I started doing that.
Okay.
There wasn't Facebook, Netflix, there wasn't Uber, other things like that. There was no AWS at that point. Yes. So
it's hard when we get all this great technology and we get so used to it. It's hard to go back in time to even figure out how did we even survive.
No smartphones. So when I try to tell my kids that at that point 4K wasn't a thing, it was all pixels everywhere, and Mario Bros was like that tiny little console that we were playing with. They don't understand that, and it was not 50 years ago. It was 10, 12 years ago. It wasn't a long time ago.
Yeah, you bring about a great point, because I've noticed in my own kind of observations, the trajectory of pace of innovation.
Oh yeah.
It's fairly linear for several years, but now I think with the advent of cloud, it's like a hockey stick in many industries across the board. So it's really fascinating to watch.
Yeah. It's really interesting how things change in the last 10 years. And you can see this exponential growth on innovation, as you just mentioned. And I think it's a great era to live in. And I don't know my kids will realize that 15 years ago, there was no kind of 4K, 8K, etc. It wasn't like that. Like
before. Yeah. It seems like every generation goes back and tells their kids the same thing. Because I would say back when I was growing up, the Atari and it was out and stuff. So yeah. I could probably remember my parents saying, we didn't have an Atari when I was growing up. But now you can go back and look at the Atari and it's like this archaic rectangular block. Wasn't any GPUs or metaverse or 3D rendering.
Yeah, exactly. And then I basically joined typical blue chip companies and Argentina. And that's I started my cloud journey and started experiencing with cloud. And so for me, it was that move from building servers, going to a data center and racking, cabling things, to then write a 10 lines of code script. And then, boom, that creates machines on the fly. So it was a revolutionary moment that definitely changed the way that I was working back in, when was it, 2012, 2011.
That's great. One thing I wanted to just double click on, because a lot of the folks that kind of watch here would want to know, how do you overcome some of the challenges historically when you were either when you were back in Argentina trying to launch doing the installation of the modems or doing the customer support? How do you respond when you hit a hurdle? Just kind of curious there.
You need to understand that back in the days, there were a few people in Latin America who were speaking English, and there was no kind of a documentation in another language. The typical IT language is English, or at least it was. There were no kind of translations for that. So I was very fortunate that, went to the private English lessons, and that I think helped me to absorb all that knowledge and always trying to be ahead of the curve in terms of things that were releasing different companies. So I remember installing my first Linux distribution, following a kind of a book like this, reading SUSE installation and trying to compile kernels and things like that. And I was 16, 17 years old when doing that. So it always was around trying to see what's new, what's coming, and trying to experiment. And I think this new cloud era of which says, go and build, create your own stuff, make mistakes, and do it again, learn from mistakes. And I think it was always part of my DNA. And I'm not ashamed to say that I broke databases in production. I just shut down servers in production, just made mistakes building servers. And I had a sometimes hefty cloud bills because, I forgot to shut down something. It's part of the experience. And I think it's very important when you learn from mistakes. Yeah.
That's really awesome. I see a couple qualities that really stand out, especially as I talk to many tech founders. One is a very strong learn and curious sense there. And then it is also the not being afraid to fail, which seems like it's definitely served you very well.
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
So I was kind of reading your bio and you transitioned from Argentina to London. So I'm curious about that inflection point where opportunity met preparation, as I'll call it. What kind of sparked the transition to London?
It was a bit of a challenge. So imagine that you're living in a country where you speak the language, where you have a good job, and then eventually some opportunity comes up and say, hey, we want you here within the next 45 days. Because it was like that.
Wow.
Basically, I had to grab tickets. I had to come with my family. I was married and had one kid by then. And we had to sell everything that we had back in Argentina and come to the UK, to London, and start a new life. Because one thing is, having one call sometimes in English. Another thing is just living in English.
That's right.
And I think it was a great experience being here for the past almost 10 years now. So it's been a great experience to shift from that sort of space where you're comfortable and experience something completely new and have this sort of experience of dealing with new situations, talking to people in a non-native language. For me, so it was really challenging and fulfilling, as I said.
That's right. Yeah, I always grew up with the saying, opportunity seldom knocks twice. So I can imagine you were probably torn to leave your home and roots, but it definitely sounds like it was an opportunity that was too good to pass up, and been there for 10 years. So things sound like they've worked out well.
Yeah, it did. Indeed.
Nice. So let's kind of transition to when you were in London and talk about some of the corporate experience in the context of how that would later shape you and serve as input into launching your own startup.
Yeah, so one of the things that I loved, I'll say, it's more like loved, is making things right and making things right for the right purpose. So as I said, from the beginning, when I was doing this kind of a customer support role back in the 2000 or 1999, then transition into a more kind of a lead engineer role. And then when I came to the UK and leading a DevOps team here, was always about what's right for the customer. Sometimes I used to work for these companies where, no, we need to sell, we need to sell, we need to sell. Actually, no, I mean, we need to do it what's right for them at this point. And then they'll trust you and they will buy whatever you want to sell. But first you need to show them that you're empathizing with them, you know, that you are putting the right nuts and bolts in the right place for them.
Absolutely.
So when going to this kind of a corporate world where it's all about money, a kind of a experience that no, probably this is not what I'm good at. I'm not good at selling for the sake of it. It's more about making sure that we don't repeat things. We don't have to come twice here for the same reason. It's about on a work ethic environment, it's not good. So that's basically what kind of drove my passion and desire to build something that the customers are able to do it once with a couple of clicks, and that's it. They set it up for some time, you know, and we don't have to charge customers for doing the same thing twice. It's unethical in my point.
Exactly. Yeah, that was beautifully said. I'm getting goosebumps on my arms here because I really like your sense of empathizing with your customers. And you had some of those not so great experiences in the corporate world where the company, the enterprise is like driving you to hit these numbers, hit these goals and trying to piece it together. But I really like your sense of working backwards from fulfilling the needs of the customer and being empathetic to their concerns and then using that as input to develop a product which helps those customers deliver their business outcomes.
Correct. And again, it's all about trust. When a customer trusts you because you are understanding what position they are, in which state of their journey they are, it's very, for them, is they feel that you're part of their business, that you want them to be successful. And that's what I feel, that if I make them successful, they will come back and ask me for more help or for more advice. And that is essentially what we're looking and what we're doing here at Staxon.
That's absolutely right. Now, we've transitioned through the early days, childhood, the early 20s, blasted through corporate life. Now, when does it hit you? All the culmination of all your life experiences, when does it hit you one day you wake up and you're like, you know what? I think I'm going to launch a startup. Take us to that moment.
So for me, it was more around pandemic kind of lockdown. So I don't know how you call it in the US. We call it lockdown here.
Lockdown, yeah.
Imagine that one day someone on the news or television, whatever, says, from tomorrow, you cannot get out. It was at the beginning, you know, what you think is, oh, amazing. I'll have some holidays. Yeah, okay. One day, yeah. 2 days. 3 days and there is no more TV shows to watch. Okay, so what am I going to do now? And if you are used to very fast-paced environment where you need to achieve something on a daily basis, which is what I feel every day.
Yes.
It's something kind of start itching and say, okay, I need to do something. And basically I look back and said, okay, what is the thing that I'm doing on every single job that I go? Every time I was doing exactly the same, with a little bit of tweaks here, tweaks there, but I feel the organizations need now a simple way to manage what they put in the cloud. So it's, okay, I have this box of Legos. And
lots of Legos, like lots of Legos.
Yeah. If someone just turn the box around and say, okay, go and build. Oh, right. So we have squares, we have rectangles here, and we have this little piece. Oh, this is red, and this is brown, and this is green. All right, how do I make a house out of this? How do I make sure that this house is not going to fall over when I put the next piece on, you know? So essentially what I thought was, okay, how can we make some sort of pre-built plans where people can, oh, this is what I need. This is the type of house that I want. Okay, And these are the pieces that I need. These are the Lego pieces that I need to build this house. Or even more, you know what? There is a pre-built house here. And you can put a little bit of a garden on the front. You can put a red door. You can put a two windows on. So that is, in a nutshell, what I thought when I said, I can build this. I can create a platform where organizations can quickly adopt cloud, making sure security and governance is part of that.
Absolutely. I guess if you had to sum it up, you had been working with many customers. Many customers are looking to do the same thing, but every time they go to do it, everyone is starting with a huge bucket of Legos and struggling to put it all together. You zoomed out, taking a 10,000 foot view and saw, wait a second, I can automate these things, develop reference architectures, and then help your customers stamp these things out at scale, thus removing that undifferentiated heavy lifting of having to put individual Lego blocks together.
And it's not only to small customers, because this is happening at a big scale with enterprises.
Yes.
The main issue with enterprises is time and money. They spend tons of money and a lot of time trying to figure it out something where at some point they say, I think this is the way that we can do it. And that's too late, because technology, as we spoke before, changes so dramatically in 2 years' time that it's too late. What you've been planning to do in 2 years, during the last 2 years, it's not good now. So you lost a huge opportunity to be ahead of your competitors and build something just because of the bureaucracy of we build it in red or in green. We put a column here or we put a rug. So basically what we're trying to do with Stacks, and that's why we're very successful, is to have these sort of blueprints that allow organizations to adopt these blueprints. And in less than a couple of hours, you have it built and you can start fresh. You can start from scratch. You can potentially bring your accounts and apply these guardrails in order to put it back to where it belongs.
Excellent. Let's just dive just slightly deeper. I'd like to know, who is StackZone's ideal customer? And walk me through some of the specifics based on what type of customer I am and what I can look for StackZone to solve for me, I guess specifically in the context of my AWS cloud environments.
Okay. So again, typical customers here range from small to medium businesses to mid-sized enterprises. And these typical customers are customers just starting their cloud migration, and they see these as an opportunity to make it right. So you have two types of customers here, the ones that rush to be in the cloud and they did it some mistakes. It's too late to fix it. So we need to continue. And the problem with that is that start building those problems and at some point everything crashes. Then you have the other type of customers who are cloud native customers. They were born in the cloud. They started with a number of developers who started building things. And the problem with that is we started with a dev account and then it was too late to create another one. So we just copy paste the environment and now it's production and we have dev and prod in the same account. And actually we cannot split the permissions. Okay, a developer has access to both and we just use a credentials file or some sort of environment variables file. And oops, at some point I forgot to switch from dev to prod or prod to dev. And I just dropped my data, that kind of thing.
Oops.
Exactly. These mistakes is what we aim to avoid by adopting this kind of a multi-account strategy. And the typical multi-account strategy misconception is, oh, but that's going to cost me twice much or three times more, four times more. And that's not true, because what we want with this multi-account strategy is that you have accounts for the different projects, potentially, and different environments. And then you have a separation of duties, accounts for a specific duty, an account for security, an account for shared services, an account for networking, et cetera, et cetera. And what basically allows you this is to make sure that if something happens in one account, you know, it's not going to happen in another.
That's right.
Customers who are looking for this sort of compliance is typically the customers who are more towards adopting. And when I say compliance, I'm not saying only SOC, PCI, ISO 27001. I'm just saying best practices. So making sure that your resources are backed up, making sure that are encrypted, making sure that your, I don't know, are not public. So you don't have any S3 bucket public, you don't have any RDS public. They have some deletion protection, making sure that your load balancers cannot accidentally delete it, that your EC2 instances are going to be spun up on the right region, that your AM users have MFA, they have a password policy, that sort of things that for the ones who live and breathe cloud every day, it's something common. Obviously, I'm not going to create a user with password 1234. Yes.
Exactly.
But remember that not everyone lives and breathes this. And that is where right. You sometimes need a helping hand. And that is where what we are providing here in an automated way, of course.
That's right. Yeah. So you just really gave a lot of insight and wisdom there. As a solutions architect working with AWS with many different customers on a regular basis, when you start with what I call a vanilla AWS account, so that's just you fire up an AWS account, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And based on what you've told me, Stack Zone really not only does it just set up your landing zone right out of the box, but you're also putting in guardrails. You also have the blueprints that are aligning to certain compliance requirements. And these are all automated, right?
It's fully automated. So from the moment that you create an account at Stack Zone and then do the dirt, which is 6 steps, and then building the pipeline to create all the accounts and all the governance and security controls, it could take from potentially 2 hours to 6 hours, depending on the blueprint that you select. But most importantly is this is going to be for your existing accounts. What about a new account? Okay, I have a new project. I have a new environment. So how long it will take for you to configure all of that in a new account? The only thing you have to do is just click Add Account, add it to Stack Zone, and automatically it will set up everything the same way that is set up on the other accounts that you're
running. Oh, wow. So this is almost
no human intervention. So the point here is that reducing human error. We all are human. I explain myself that I drop databases, I delete it, etc. So how can we avoid that? How can we make sure that every single, I don't know, CloudWatch alarm that we set up is set up in the same way in every single account that we create? So all these silly mistakes that we can make because someone called me or because, oh, I'm going to go and grab a coffee and I'm waiting back. Oh, which step I was? It was setting up the alarm or setting up the threshold.
That's right.
So that doesn't happen with automation. And that's the beauty of it. It's a robot doing the work for us. And that's everyone's dream.
Yeah. And what's really so awesome is that when you automate, things go faster. But what's counterintuitive, typically when humans go faster, that's when more mistakes happen. So with the Stack Zone's products, now we're automating and we're going faster, but we're not making mistakes because everything is scripted out. So I can take an account right. That's just like I want it and then stamp it out to another account. So I'm following best practices according to what my organization has deemed to be 2 thumbs up.
And exactly. One of the things here is that what you are actually building here is a, let's say a cookie. So you're setting up these sort of control points that your organization says, we need to make sure that these are the instances allowed in this organization. So we don't want any, let's say, T2 instances. We need T3 only. Okay, perfect. So you define that. So no one is going to go and create a T2 because it's going to give you an API error because you are not allowed to do it. Or you have compliance requirements that your data cannot live outside of the US. So how do you make sure that's enforced? And all those, again, little things that start adding up. And then at the end of the day, you have data in Europe that you cannot have. You have instances everywhere that your buckets are public and your password policy is not correct. And then suddenly someone says, oh, next week is coming the auditor. What? Yeah, he's coming to see that we have everything.
Actually, not a good feeling.
Don't.
Yeah, the auditors are coming.
Yeah, exactly. So in order to avoid that sort of feeling that you just said is, okay, we need to have this like a checklist. And what Stack Zone does is that checklist can be done with toggles. Enable this, enable that. And that's it. Automatically remediate what you have wrong And if you have to create a new account, it will just push all those policies and controls over the new account that you create.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. Not only are we setting up net new accounts, but as even for existing customers that have AWS accounts, now we can use this to employ guardrails compliance, like ongoing, leveraging exactly. StackZone. That's great.
Exactly, because this is not just a one-time thing. It's not a typical consultancy exactly, that it comes and, okay, professional services, come here, do the job, and yeah, perfect. Everything is 100%. See you later. Yeah, 2 months on the road. Oh, we're creating new stuff. We're creating new things here, a new account. Oh, we need to call the consultancy again. So the idea with StackZone is that, and I'm not going to be a fool here and say that we solve everything, because that's not true. So we essentially try to fix whatever is the art of possible, and that is our aim. And sometimes some things require manual intervention.
Yes.
But whatever it is, it's possible to automate and to remediate. There we are, ready to step up and to make it.
Nice. For those watching this right now, Fernando, how would somebody reach out to StackZone to see a demo or learn more about the product?
So it's really simple. So you just go to StackZone.com, and once you're there, we have a little bubble on the bottom right. So you just talk to us. We're 24/7. So we're happy to give you a demo and show you what can be done and how fast and simple can be done.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you. And one thing I wanted to touch on also, what's your feedback loop look like with your customers? Because you're iterating on this pretty fast.
Yes, and it's great that you just asked me that, because we're very much a product-led organization. So we want essentially our roadmap to be driven by our customers and to be driven by our customers. So we have a feedback page, and customers essentially can put their wish list. It's like we are Santa Claus. So they just put a wish list and they say, I would like to monitor this. I would StackZone to alert me on that. And one of the things that we also have for our customers is that we invite them to our demo. You know, so basically we run different sprints for our product, and we invite customers to our demo sessions so they can have it from before our release and what they're going to be having in the next. So it's very important for us to always check with our customers and what we're doing and making sure that we are fulfilling their needs.
Awesome. As we kind of get to the end here, one other question I wanted to ask you are, is StackZone hiring right now?
We are. So essentially, we have a very diverse team. We're fully remote. We are in 6 countries at the moment. Yeah. So essentially, we have a careers page. So again, if you head off to our website, StackZone.com, there is a careers link there. And we have different roles in different areas.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. I'm definitely interested in seeing a demo here in the future. Maybe we can get together again and maybe do a live stream to dig into the platform, because it's quite fascinating. And I like to say, I work with customers on a daily basis, and many of the things that you have automated are very difficult to do manually. So yeah, I'm really excited to see more in the future from StackZone.
Yeah, it'll be a pleasure to be here and do a demo, of course.
Awesome. And the last question I'll ask is, for anybody that's watching this right now that's really has an idea and they really haven't got it off the ground yet, what kind of words of encouragement could you give to them to help them on their way?
So my little piece of advice, try to always see what's going on in the industry. So my morning coffee is with the AWS news. So I typically have to read that news page every day, and then I filter it. But if you're not, haven't started yet, you know, again, try to go over the cloud practitioner certification. So we encourage all our people in StackZone to go on that certification, no matter if you're technical or not, because the idea here is that you start feeling what are these services available and what can you do in the cloud. So the thing is, for both things here, is trying to follow the news, trying to connect the dots and try to get on the learning process. Cloud. Yeah.
That's awesome. Excellent words of wisdom. Keep a finger on the pulse and always continue to learn. Well, Fernando, thank you so much for your time today. This is an incredible interview.
Thanks, Greg. And thank you, everyone listening and watching.
Thank you. And all the best to StackZone. Take care, everybody.